The views and opinions of the Dr. Kent Show are those of the host and guest only. They do not represent the opinions of KFNX staff or management. Dr. Kent holds a PhD, a doctorate, and a doctor of philosophy in psychology with an emphasis in industrial organizational psychology. The advice and expertise presented is generic in nature and draws upon more than two decades of experience in mental health services across a wide variety of settings. The Dr. Kent Show is provided for entertainment and educational purposes only. For diagnosis and treatment, please see your own personal doctor of medicine. For callers, nothing presented implies the establishment of a relationship, professional or otherwise. Dr. Kent is the developer of positive projective psychology.
Welcome to the Dr. Kent Show, giving psychology away. Here now, Dr. Kent, PhD.
Welcome to Dr. Kent Show. Am I on the air? I don't have any red going on in here at all. I am. Thanks, Norm. All right. I come into the studio kind of purposely unprepared, but I had so much malaise this last week that I just feel like killing something. But I got no hunting license. I don't think the seasons are open right now. And that's okay. But following on that solar-powered show, I wanted to tell you how I save $50 a month, every month on my electricity bill. Now, I know some of you are going to hold me to that, and what's your scientific proof that you save $50 a month? Well, it's pretty simple. I got my house in 2002, and I bought this product, and at the time, the SRP wanted $144 every month for my electric bill. That's what they wanted on average based upon the previous owner's usage in the house. And I decided I didn't want to go with that. I just want to pay what I use because I don't like those average things. I want to pay what I use. I don't want to have to owe money down the road. I don't want them collecting in advance. But, you know, the call-in line today, if you want to save me from my malaise, maybe even you want to volunteer to have your head bitten off today, 602-277-5369. And if you're out there across the fruited plain, toll free is 866. Of course, you put a 1 in front of that 866. 536-1100. Okay, 536-1100. Right now, I've got Elite Solar Systems website pulled up. And what I wanted to tell you about was that solar-powered attic fan of mine. And at the time I bought it, 2002, the state was phasing out some incentives they had for solar power. I think I just got 50% credit instead of the 100% they offered the years before that. But I'll tell you, that thing's been a little charm. My electric use is down so much that the electric company wants me to pay $95 a month now, every month, instead of $144 from 2002. Now, I don't know how many times the rates have gone up, how many times they've gone up each year, how many times they went up this year. So it's probably saving me right around $50 a month. Now, it cost me less than $500. So payback period was, 10 months? And the average payback on an insulation job is 2.5 years. So if you spend $1,500 on insulation, it's going to take you 2.5 years. Oh, I'm not giving you a very good example. Let's say you spend $1,800. It's going to take you 2.5 years to get your money back at that $100 a month. Well, this payback is much quicker. There's got to be some sort of recent legislation that gives you credits. I hate to sell something on tax credits. I know that that's considered a good thing, but I don't think the government should be taking that much money anyway and making a bunch of phony money, and everything should be based upon, you know, the cost effectiveness of it. You know, does it actually help you? Now, Elite Solar Systems is a local company. At the time, I researched a lot of different solar-powered attic fans, and I went and looked at the electric ones. That's going to cost me $20 a month to run it. Okay. I have a two-story house, and when I first got there, at 1 o'clock at night or in the morning, whatever you want to call it, shortly after midnight, the heat would come down through that roof and cook me. I could not sleep. There was no way that I could sleep in the house. So I was desperate. And a friend says, don't add more insulation to this. You want to get some ventilation. So I did my research. There were three manufacturers of this, and the two leading ones at the time were outside the valley. Then I found out about Elite Solar Systems, and then I looked at their product and compared it to the other two. It was superior. The flanging allowed more removal of air. They used Siemens solar power panels. It's a split panel. They recommended not investing the $20 on the thermostat. Just let it run all winter long as well as the summer. And when I first got the house, and in the summertime, would open up the access door, and just, man, the heat would just curl your eyebrows, melt your eyelashes. I mean, it was oppressive. But once I put the solar-powered attic fan in, sure, it was hot up there, but the heat stayed up there. It no longer blasted you when you stood underneath the access door. Like I said, if you want to save yourself, you know, a good amount of money, and it's much more comfortable. I don't have that blast of hot air that migrates down from the attic in the summertime at 1 a.m. waking me up. That's something impossible to – I mean, it just was uncanny how it did that. But you could reach those folks there locally in Chandler, 480-635-9748. You give Crystal a call. Tell her Dr. Kent sent you. I'm tossing this one in here for them today. They let me know recently they signed up to help Michelle out here. So it's been the holidays, so I haven't been able to work with them just yet the way I'd like to, getting their ads out. But and look at Elite Solar Systems, and that solar-powered attic fan is a gem. You've got an HOA, no problem. You can get it up on your roof without any problem. They paint it to match the roof color, the tiles, and it just really, really works, and it pays itself off probably in a year at this point, because I think they're about $600. I think they went up a little bit. It's that German engineering on the solar-powered attic, you know, that's gone up. All right. Now, you want to call me 602-277-KFNX. That would be really nice. Now, I fail as a talk show host because, you see, what I'm supposed to be able to do is get in a caller's face, abuse you on air for everybody to see, hear, feel, and hang up on you. But you won't let me do it. Actually, folks have been too kind when you call in, and I don't really have it in me to do that. So if you want to help exercise me and help me develop some flexibility and become a success, you can just say role play. That gives me the permission I need. I guess I need permission. It just doesn't make sense to do it that way sometimes. But like I said, I'm not carrying anybody else's water. No way. I think that's how I differ from the others. I don't keep up as well with current events as I should. You know, I've been thinking the hot zone was actually the Indian-Pakistan frontier, figuring it could literally go hot. It could go thermonuclear at any time in the subcontinent of India. It looked like the Israeli-Gaza Strip thing was really, it was catching their attention, and I didn't think it was that important, but it looks as though Pakistan has mobilized its troops for some time so that India can't hit them and do a lot of damage. It would be rarely difficult this time. And President Bush has somehow intervened. So it doesn't look like we'll be seeing a thermonuclear war between Pakistan and India at this time. But, you know, it could happen at any time. The people in India are so upset over the Taj Mahal incident, over the hotel, 200 people killed. They're so upset over that the people were really pushing for their government to strike Pakistan. And I don't think this Pakistani government can buy off much longer on – they didn't know about it. They didn't have any control over it. But, you know, Hamas is there among the Palestinians, and Hamas is getting routed out pretty effectively, and it's a pretty scary situation. I don't think it's the most dangerous front in the world. You know, the fact is that doesn't seem like anybody knows how to fight a real war anymore. Maybe the Israelis are going to show us how it's supposed to be done now. I think the Israelis might as well just take over Gaza. Just take it back. Take it over. I don't think they need to remove the Palestinians. What's your opinion on that? Do they need to? I mean, what do we need? Do they need to exercise a scorched earth policy? You know, go back to when Joshua entered the promised land under the orders from the Lord to kill them all, kill all the Canaanites. I don't know. I don't think so. Okay, 602-277-KFNX, 5369, toll free, 1-866-536-1100. Now, I know, I can't win. I know I'm going to get preempted by football again. And that's basketball. No, it's football today. That's what I'm saying. I can't win. You know, it's the Cardinals game today, but you're right. It's basketball. That's next weekend. But I'll be on the rest of the Saturdays right to the last day of the month here. So I get it that way. Also, following this show today, we're starting a new show. And I don't know, for my poor friends out there who are still have hangovers, I don't really want to tell you the name of it. It's not exactly the most. What is it? What's the name of that show, Norm? Yeah. I mean, it just makes me feel so nice and warm whenever I hear the name of that. But, oh, well, that's going to start in today. That might segue in and make a nice afternoon with a little bit of controversy here. Yeah, in the future here, I've got a couple of guests lined up that I really want to bring aboard. I've looked at a couple of naturopathic physicians and heard these guys recently, and they've given me some tips, and I've synthesized their work. And I've come up with a major environmental contaminant, poison, that results in a lot of mental retardation and mental illness. Now, whether or not it might be contributing to autism, I don't know. But when I first started practicing, well, no more time for this or that. Catch me on the backside, 602-277-KFNX.
Welcome back to the Dr. Katz Show, giving psychology away. Here now, Dr. Katz, Ph.D.
Oh, there we go. All right. Had my headphone volume down, and I couldn't tell if I was really here or not. Thought I was hearing things, like my voice in the distance. Number here, 602-277-5369. Or toll-free all across a fruited plain, up to the frozen tundra, and out there on, well, the state of Hawaii that includes the island of Kenya. You can call 1-866-536-1100. You can also get a hold of me through my website, drkentshow.com. Email me through that. I've got the webmail up. There's 100 megabytes of space for you right there, and nothing's in the box. Man, please don't email me so much we fill that 100 megabytes up, folks. This is real simple. You know, we all would like to see justice, and it seems like hardly a day goes by without there being less of it. We have certain myths and mottos we live by, and I guess that I have to admit I'm somewhat, I guess I hold on to something so tightly that it becomes rather non-functional and rigid, and I guess it can be defined as being mentally ill, you know. I guess so. I mean, you know, truth, justice, and the American way. Do you remember where that motto came from? Well, I certainly do, but I don't think we care that much. I mean, I think that as a people, we've lost it. And I can tell you roughly when it happened. I mean, we used to be people that said, tell us the facts. Tell us the truth. We can handle it. We'll deal with it. Just tell us the truth. And that's the way it used to be. No matter how bad it is, just tell us where we'll face this. We'll deal with it. But that changed. And it became, don't tell us. We don't want to know. We don't want to deal with it. And I think as a result of that, the inability to face reality, to embrace the truth, to be flexible enough to, well, to even want to hear it, we've lost out. Now, that change occurred, I think, during the Clinton presidency. And I think what brought it on was an embedded message. And the embedded message was, and it targeted one thing, but it went broad spectrum. The target was on gays in the military. And what was the motto? Don't ask, don't tell. Well, sadly, that was adopted across the whole country. Don't ask, don't tell. We don't want to know the truth. We don't want to hear it. And we became more politically correct than ever. What's the worst thing about political correctness? The inability to think, the inability to reason, the inability to communicate honestly with your fellow human being. You know, I've lived all over the country, and when I was in New York, the people were a little bit brusque. They talked quickly. They covered a lot of territory. They didn't wait very much for anybody else. They kept going as quickly as they could. They told you the details and all that. They told it without being sweet and soft, you know, and soppy and smiling in your face. If they didn't like you or like something, they said it to your face. And they were done with it. And, you know, it was just matter of fact. I mean, that was pretty reasonable on the left coast. What do? Well, they smile at you and reach around and stick you in the back and maybe give it a twist or two as they grin and leer at you and pretend they are in love with you. It seemed a lot nicer. It was seductive, yes. It was very, very cajoling, but it just wasn't nearly as nice as being told the truth and moving on and realizing it's okay to disagree. We don't have to agree on everything. We don't have to agree on what color the grass is or the moon is or anything like that or which way up is. You know, I've been keeping up with some of my journals, and there's a couple of things that have come to mind which really are kind of bothering me somewhat. I subscribe to the APA Monitor, the American Psychological Association Monitor, like most members do. I get that. I also get, we have a call. Hey, Nick, welcome to the show, and thank you for saving me.
Hey, good deal. Yeah, I agree that we've lost it. I think President Eisenhower's worst fears have come to pass.
Okay.
And we have, we no longer own our government.
We certainly don't.
Corporations own it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's hard to disagree with that observation. As simplistic as it seems to be simply true. And especially when you think in terms of what was fascism, what was Nazi Germany about? You had government controlling the corporations, and that was pretty obvious. But we've had, what, corporations controlling the government?
Yeah.
That's your point?
Yeah. And I'm wondering how we get this back.
You know, I think it has to be a mass education, re-education. And I don't know how to impose that upon people because people don't have the time to read. They don't want to take the time to read. Now, I propose people read 3 books, and they're on my website. And the first one deals with the history of money and banking and this cartel. They foist it off on us, the Federal Reserve System. And I'd like to get Griffin. I've invited him to be a guest on the show. I think he's a distant relative of mine. He may come on. If he's related to me, it would be through my maternal grandmother's distant cousin, perhaps. But The Creature from Jekyll Island, he recently reissued the book. It sold out in 2 weeks in December. They're printing more editions of it up. I think the first thing to do is read that book. Now, I don't know if you've heard me very often, Nick. I haven't been on the air.
This is the first time.
Okay, now what I said before, somebody corrected me on. What I said was, shut it down. I want to shut it down. And my friend says, John, and she'd been in radio 20 years. She says, you can't say shut it down. You can say anything, but you cannot say shut it down. And I didn't complete the thought.
Is that like shut down the Federal Reserve?
Well, I think we need to shut down that and huge amounts of the federal government that aren't constitutional. I think that the secret to shutting down the Federal Reserve is actually to pay off all the debts. I think that's the secret way to destroy the beast. And the reason I say that is because as those instruments collapse, as they're getting paid off, all those extra loans based upon those, that extra false collateral that they make by fractional banking and all that other stuff, that collapses too. That's my guess. I could be wrong about that. I really want to ask the author, Griffin, G. Edward Griffin about that. And I think that we need to shut that thing down because that's the source of the greed, the corruption. When you read that book, you'll realize that Napoleon wasn't beat by Duke of whatever he was, Wellington. He wasn't beat by him. He was beat by a 19-year-old, snotty-faced Rothschild child named Anschel, who talked him, he talked Napoleon into letting him run contraband that into the country, including gold, through to Spain from Germany. The purpose of that was to back the loans that England, that the Duke, that the King, whatever, needed for the armies. And by having those loans, based upon the gold that Rothschilds took through the country, they beat Napoleon. So, and I think the wars of the last century were pretty much all fomented based upon that monster. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, people can say, well, it's good that we have this flexible system, but it's bad that these people control it and control us. So,
have you read The Late Great USA by,
No, I haven't, but who wrote it?
Yeah, The Late Great USA. I can't remember the author right now. It's about the takeover of Europe by the European Union and the proposed takeover of the U.S., Mexico, and Canada by the North American Union.
Various plots. I haven't read it, but I know that people will poo-poo any of this because it's conspiracy literature. Well, I think when you read Griffin's book, you realize this is history. This is all factual. But there is a book that was published by an insider of the conspiracist named Carol Quigley. And a link to that book is also on my website, drkentshow.com. And there's another book there called The Naked Capitalist, written by a guy named W. Cleon Skousen. Now, Mr. Skousen is deceased, I found out recently. He died, I think, January of 2006. But he gave a critique of Carol Quigley's book. And we got just a few seconds left here, Nick. Do appreciate the call now.
Okay.
Get the Cleon Skousen book, because he tells you how it happened politically, and it's factual and historical, and it comes from an insider of the big, great conspiracy, the New World Order. All right, catch you on the backside, folks.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kent Show, giving psychology away. Here now, Dr. Kent, Ph.D.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kent Show. Say, Nick, and a little bit of a follow-up, and thanks for that call. It was really appropriate. I'm not going to speak French here. Oh, I tried speaking French when I was in junior high school. Look, I'm not going to sing today either. My brother said I sounded like a cow when I sang last time, but you know, I really think that having a Pelosi presidency would be saving the Constitution, and if that doesn't rankle you, you're not listening, I don't think so. You can give me a call and complain, 602-277-5369. Or if you like the idea of Pelosi for president, we'd love to hear from you, too. 1-866-536-1100. The website is up, drkentshow.com. You can email me through that. As a follow-up on that, Nick, Mr. Skousen's book is an important book. He gives you in 130 pages a succinct synopsis of the most salient features of Carol Quigley's book, Hope and Tragedy. You see, the hope are those that are pushing for the New World Order, and the tragedy are we who are in their way. And but we need to thank Carol Quigley for writing that wonderful work. He documented the whole deal. Published in 1966, we have perfect proof that there is a conspiracy. That's it. I highly recommend those two. The third book there is the one by Eustace Mullins, and it's a little bit tougher to swallow. It's a little bit harder to understand the writing style. It's the culmination of Eustace Mullins' work and research of 40 years, so he claims in the preface. and it will explain where the bankers came from, how they developed, morally or rather immorally. And it shows the bigger picture, and that is a scary book. That one I don't recommend for children. I think the first two are perfect books for homeschooling. Yeah, you know, last week I said parents fail the children. Now, I didn't get to go very far with that, but what I mean by that is that parents have to fail their children so that the children move on independently. That's just the natural order, the natural way of things. But folks, you're not supposed to fail until they're around 20, 25 years of age. This failing at 2 years or 6 months or 12 years, it's got to stop. And the problem is you expect the state to take over for you, babysit your kids, take the responsibility for them. Now, of course, the state's trying to take away your responsibility. In psychology, public policy, and law, which I subscribe to, it's an official law review of the University of Arizona College of Law and the University of Miami School of Law. There was an article a while back on how they were trying to make it illegal for a parent to spank their child. And they were going to put it through the United Nations and from there put it through on the rest of us, especially here in the United States of America. Bad news, bad choice. But, you know, how we fail our children today is phenomenal. I mean, I didn't think it was much fun when I was growing up, and I remember there were some really difficult times. At the time, it seemed like, well, I know that I dwelled on those more than I should have, but today I see children and it's like, we don't protect them from anything. We don't withhold anything from their ears or anything from their eyes. They're subject to all kinds of stressors and expectations and all kinds of reasons to feel ashamed, or maybe worse yet, to not feel ashamed. And it's pretty scary. I'm going to be offering some services in coaching, executive coaching. And a friend of mine has begged me to offer working with families. And the reason for it is because every day in his job, he sees children referred 6 months of age who are on, Risperdal and lithium, very heavy drugs for mental disorders. 6-month-old babies. Now, there's something about child exploitation to that. I mean, so the child doesn't sleep through the night and you don't want to be bothered, so you want the child medicated out of its gourd so it can just lay there and come to life when you're ready for it? That's child abuse. And I don't understand the physicians that prescribe these medications for these kids so liberally. I mean, you've got a nervous system that's developing and you're hitting it with a medication that retards the nervous system, that knocks it down, that kills it. You know, they're called neuroleptics, major tranquilizers. And what that means is, you know, this prunes the hairs off the neuron, that prunes the rich connections, that literally removes them. And it's atrocious. Well, another thing that I found out recently, what he tells me is that when he sees somebody for disability, a child referred, if the parent gives the child the medications, they don't believe the parent. I mean, if the child's given medications by the parent, then obviously they work. Child doesn't need disability. So the parent loses their mad money, their cash for their child, their disabled child, for the child they're failing to parent and rear properly. They lose their reward. But on the other hand, he says that if the teacher gives the child the medication, then, oh, that's a state program that we can trust the teacher. Child must be disabled. So they award the disability based upon that. So, I mean, if you want to play the disability game, make sure that the teacher gives your child the pills. Now, I'm going to tell you what really turns my stomach. I had a therapist come to see me to tell me, Dr. Kent, I want to tell you about this child. You're going to see him. I want you to test him. The doctor says in order to give him a little stronger medications, we need a diagnosis and a better diagnosis. We need a, and you're not going to see this unless I tell you about it. And I sat there nodding my head, getting along with her. It's like, okay, well, fine. You know, so here it is. She's trying to tell me how to do my job. Tell me how, what I'm supposed to see. And I did my best to go along with the program because I didn't want to upset her. She was a master's level school therapist. I'm a pulse toll digger, piled high deep. I mean, what do I know? And all I know is that if I don't find this diagnosis, the child's not going to be able to get the stronger medications. The teacher's complaining and the master's level therapist is not happy because she's complaining too. Anyway, I see the child. Not much is wrong with the child. Pretty normal child, a little bit on the active side. Oh, they were upset with me. I recommended that they use the behavioral shaping exercises in a book by David Stein, who's that published by? Oh, can't remember right offhand. $15 book. Ritalin is not the answer. A behavioral guide to the management of an ADHD child. The first three chapters are anti-drug. Skip those. Chapter four starts the child. What is it? Child caregiver skills program. CSP. David Stein communicated to me that that was the real title he wanted for the book, but the publisher wanted Ritalin is not the answer, something would catch people's attention and would sell. You start with that, and you'll be amazed. He gives you tips on how to work with a school. That's an important thing. He tells you how to improve attention because of the inattentive behaviors are the hardest to treat. It's really good stuff. Yeah, you know, my mother told me, you didn't come with a manual, kid. They didn't issue manuals. She used to tell me that all the time. Of course, I heard about the book and I said, hey, Mom, guess what? There's a manual now. All right. Number here, 602-277-KFNX. Now, if you think it's a good idea to raise these kids on drugs, think about this. Ritalin, also known as methylphenidrate, is what they use, what we use today when we want to research cocaine. Cocaine's a very controlled, narcotic. But all they do is they take the cocaine and they administer it in the same method they would cocaine. So they crunch it up and sniff it. Now, kids, don't do this with your Ritalin. And they'll fix it up in a solution to ingest intravenously. Now, kids, don't do that. And parents, don't take your kids' Ritalin and do that. It's really bad and pretty darn addicting. The worst part about Ritalin is it reduces blood flow. Okay, serum flow to the cortex, all right? That's technical. Blood flow to the brain by 30%. Now, do you think that a developing brain that should be having nutrients and should be able to grow, I mean, it needs this in order to learn, you think you should reduce the blood flow to the brain by 30% so that you can downregulate the child, control the child, subdue the child, straitjacket its attentional focus so he sits in his chair and behaves himself? And so you think you've got classroom management under control? Yeah, you don't have classroom management under control. It's been more like a war on males fought on the children. We're going to cover that in a little bit more in depth. It's a pet peeve of mine. What's your pet peeve? Call in with anything. 602-277-5369 or 866-536-1100.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kent Show, giving psychology away. Here now, Dr. Kent, PhD.
America, where are you now?
Oh,
caught me. All right. Okay, we're talking about pet peeves. You know, the APA Monitor's got a couple things in it that kind of get me. They talk about success in the state level, what they're doing in several states. Let's see, Washington, Utah, Connecticut, and Ohio, they decided that they are going to eliminate postdoctoral internships. Utah, the state legislature passed legislation this year allowing psychology doctoral students to complete all 4,000 hours of supervised training before the awarding of a doctoral degree. The law enables students who meet the mandated hours of pre-doctoral training and earn a doctorate to apply for licensure without a postdoc year. You know, at the time I graduated, there were between 250 and 400 of us who couldn't get postdoc internships. They were very pitiful. I actually, and then at the same time, the licensure boards decided they wanted to double the requirement from 1 year to 2 years in general. Now they're trying to peel it back again, downregulate it, downgrade it. We're losing losing what I consider a valuable tradition and part of the learning process. We're downgrading education and we're downgrading the training again. And at the end of this little article, is looking forward to the next year. So-and-so says psychology will be busy advancing prescriptive authority for psychologists. He expects as many as a dozen states to introduce legislation allowing appropriately trained psychologists to prescribe medications. I'm dead set against this, folks. I graduated from United States International University. Since I graduated, it has become Alliant International University. It merged with the California School of Professional Psychology. My alma mater, Alliant International University, is a leading trainer of prescriptive psychologists. And of the three men who trained me postdoc, and by the way, I've got, in one setting, I've got around 700 hours of postdoc. Another setting, I've got around 8,000 hours of postdoc. It was all those years working underneath those three gentlemen that really helped hone me, and they were kind of rough on me. I got to admit it, but the result was definitely worth it. One of my internship training supervisors is now the president of the licensure board in the state of Alaska. I'm in touch with them on a pretty regular basis. Another one has retired and even works in his retirement as a psychologist still and is really active in Mississippi. The other one is still the clinical director in Tupelo, Mississippi, at Region 3 Mental Health Center. He just recently finished the Alliant International University training in prescriptive privileges. The first one started it, but did not finish it. The other gentleman, he actually finished it and does have prescriptive authority in Mexico. And I just don't think we should be doing it. Why? For one, it shows we've totally compromised. We don't believe in our skills. We don't believe in our profession. We've given up our behavioral roots. We've given up the American traditions. It really bastardizes the profession. And what I mean by that is it's fatherless. There's no philosophy. There's no head of it anymore. It becomes really a mess. And physicians are trained in bodily systems, and medications work on principles of toxicity and disabling. So these things compromise organ systems. They're potentially lethal, especially if not monitored properly for quite a few of the psychotropics. You can develop an irreversible leukemia, all kinds of stuff. It's not, and I don't think that, can psychologists be trained to do this? Well, certainly I think that we can. I know that as far as mental health therapy, at the time I graduated, psychiatrists were given one course out of the whole time in, doing counseling. Certainly that's not the standard that most people assume they were trained at. I believe they're given more now, but I'm not for it. I'm not for it at all. I think that psychologists have a lot to offer. They need to keep up with the current science. Most don't. Everyone needs to go through behavioral training in the American tradition. The roots of that are rock solid. I mean, folks, when you change the behavior, you change the body chemistry. When you change the thinking, you can change the body chemistry. You can change the behavior. And to be honest with you, it may sound like a stretch, but when we talk about DNA causing mental illness, I don't think so. Oh, sure, there are things like Prader-Willi's. It's a very rare disorder, which is genetics. We know it's genetic. It's just really bizarre, but it's really rare. I diagnosed one in the whole time I practiced. I've seen probably a half a dozen folks with Prader-Willi syndrome anyway. The fact is that the genetic studies are grossly flawed, and the fact also is that behavior will change DNA. And I know the average psychiatrist is going to argue against that, and the average psychologist won't even fathom it. And frankly, the early Psych 101 books, the experiments on the planaria where we fed juvenile, naive planaria, the bodies, the blended bodies of their seniors who had been trained to dance in the light, well, and they were reared on those nutrients from their elders, they actually danced in the light afterwards. And that was all done through the RNA, which opened up the DNA for learning. I know that sounds impossible, but that's what I believe happens and can happen. And what's the most important thing? It's building character. And that is the best thing that a counselor, a psychologist, a coach can do. The moment you conceptualize it as a disease process, you're in trouble. Now, these kids that are on Ritalin, you think it's a good idea? Look, in a six-month period, it was less than that. Five-month period, I did 135 psychological batteries, took about a half a day apiece, to decide whether or not a child needed to be put for a trial period of stimulant medication. I was frustrated because most of the children were being referred for Ritalin. I wasn't doing much treatment. I was just doing testing and report writing. Eventually, I got into the treating, and I found out that Ritalin should be used as a last choice. You've got to do behavioral stuff first. The drug companies have polluted everything, folks. They own so much, and they're so greedy they want more. Now, where did ADHD come from as a diagnosis? It originally was called minimal brain dysfunction. And it indeed was helpful to give those children so diagnosed, properly diagnosed, a little bit of Ritalin, because these were kids who had known brain injuries. We knew from the history, or we knew from, you know, observation, that they had brain traumas, real injuries to the brain, maybe a ball peen hammer, you know, or something, or they fell on their head, or a horse kicked them. And as a result of that, they didn't have much control over themselves, and they would do self-injurious behaviors or take risks that just were outrageous. In other words, they were harming themselves, and if we didn't intervene, they were at risk for further harm. Okay, so we gave them some Ritalin. Next thing we know is we come up with the ADHD area, which allows us to bring in more children, probably 10 to 100 times more, and sell more methylphenidate and other drugs. Yeah, at one time, I think in one of the Carolinas, one of the schools, a third of the kids were on Ritalin in the classrooms. There was no classroom management. I had children coming to me at the mental health center. The parent would tell me, the teacher said, my daughter can't come back to her classroom until I get my child on Ritalin. Hold on. The teacher says, got to put this child on Ritalin. Now, this little girl was precious, folks. I mean, she sat in the chair the whole time I talked with her mother. She didn't even fidget much. I mean, she was perfectly behaved. There was no hyperactivity there at all. I just heard about David Stein's book. I hadn't had a chance to read it myself. My policy was not to recommend a book that I hadn't already read, so I could warn a client if there was something that was not fitting in the book. I had to tell her about the book. She went and got the book, came back 2 weeks, and told me, Dr. Kent, I can do this. I can do this. And the book told her step by step what to do with her daughter. Now, what I told her was to go back to the teacher and tell the teacher straight up, we're getting professional services. And if the teacher asked her again, is the child on Ritalin or something like that, just look at her, eyeball her, and tell her, we're getting professional services. Now, she's got to respect your confidentiality. I mean, she's got to have some respect. You're getting professional services. You're seeing a doctor. You're seeing Dr. Kent. Okay. It is for a teacher to tell a parent that the child must be on Ritalin is practicing medicine without a license, folks. Okay? Teacher has no way of determining that's required. And for the teacher to require the child be put on Ritalin before being in the classroom is educational abuse. The teacher ought to learn a little bit about classroom management. And then on top of that, it's child abuse. It really should be reported. But folks, you really need to find people out there in this community, and I don't know any of them offhand. I've been trying to get their attention for a little bit. I'd like to be able to have some real competent practitioners to refer you to who will help you with the behavioral interventions first before you are forced to go to hard drugs. Sorry, but that's what they are. And in case you're wondering, there were some studies out that showed very clearly that the use of stimulant medications during childhood led to children using stimulants in adulthood the rest of their life. Anyhow, then the drug companies got a hold of that, and they decided they didn't like those studies, so they paid a whole bunch of psychologists big bucks to come up with studies showing that children properly diagnosed and treated with all these drugs, including methylphenidate, weren't drug addicted down the road. As a matter of fact, their counterparts had more drug addictions. It was a bunch of lies, bought off and paid. They paid big bucks for that kind of research, folks. All right. Well, thanks, Nick, for the call. I'm not going to be here next week. I'm going to catch you the following week after that. I don't know what your pet peeve is or how I might be able to help you, but you can check me out through the drkentshow.com website. I do want to start letting you know about some of the services I'm going to be offering.